Steven Pinker's a cognitive psychologist at Harvard and a leading theorist of the mind. His best-selling books include The Stuff of Thought and How the Mind Works. Rebecca Goldstein is both a novelist and a philosopher. She's written about the mind-body problem and the great 17th century philosopher Spinoza. They're also married. So if Boston really is ground zero for intellectuals, then Pinker and Goldstein must rank as one of America's brainiest power couples. As you might guess, they share many beliefs, including strong skepticism about religion, though it's worth pointing out that Goldstein once attended an Orthodox Jewish school. Steve Paulson talked with Rebecca Goldstein and Steven Pinker about faith and reason, and he asked Goldstein why she's so drawn to Spinoza.
I think it's because of the grandeur of the ambition. He really does believe that we can save ourselves through being rational. Spinoza is a metaphysician of a very extravagant sort, meaning he wants to deduce through, you know, pure reason everything. He makes every claim for reason that's ever been made. And that gets to me. I believe in that. I believe that if we have any hope at all, it's through trying to be rigorously objective about ourselves and the world and our place in the world. And let the chips fall where they may. We have to do that. We have to submit ourselves to objectivity, to rationality. And so I think that's what it is about Spinoza. He's such a rationalist.
Hmm. Spinoza certainly dismissed the religious thinking that he had been exposed to. And I'm wondering, to turn to both of you, do you both consider yourselves atheists?
Yes.
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 Fair. Proud atheist.
Fair, we said it.
Did you have to hesitate for a moment to use that word, that dirty word?
Atheists are the most reviled minority in the United States, so it's no small matter.
It's right.
To come out and say it.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you something that I have to say I find puzzling. It's how the recent atheist manifestos by Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Christopher Hitchens have all turned into bestsellers in a country that's overwhelmingly religious. I mean, according to various polls, half of all Americans believe the Bible is the literal truth. A recent Newsweek poll found that 91% believe in God. How do you explain the enormous popularity of these books?
Part of it is that the people who buy books are not a random sample of the American population, at least the people who buy that kind of highbrow trade book. Another is that probably some of the opinions sampled by these polls are soft. When people are asked a question, they don't just kind of turn a flashlight into their data bank of beliefs and read out what they see, but they're also saying something about themselves, saying something about their relationship to their community. And when people say, yes, I believe in God, I believe in the Bible, and so on, they're kind of saying, I'm a moral person. I have solidarity with a community of churchgoers that I was brought up in and that I currently belong to. And I think that if you were to probe a lot of people's religious opinions, they would not be as thoroughgoingly religious and theological as the numbers would suggest.
It would be fascinating, though, to see a poll of the people who are buying the new atheist books and how they would answer these questions.
Steve, you recently waded into a religious controversy in itself, the proposal to require all Harvard undergraduates to take a course called Reason and Faith. And the plan was dropped after you and other critics strongly opposed this requirement. But the people who supported this idea say that every college graduate should have a basic understanding of religion because it's such a powerful cultural and political force in the world. Don't they have a point?
I think students should know something about religion as a historical phenomenon, in the same way that they should know something about socialism, about humanism, about the other great ideas that have shaped political philosophies and then therefore the course of human events. I didn't like the idea of privileging religion above other ideologies that were also historically influential, like socialism, like capitalism, and so on. I also didn't like the euphemism faith, nor did I like the juxtaposition of faith and reason as if they were just two alternative ways of knowing.
Well, let me cite one of your critics in this controversy, Stephen Prothero, who's a religious studies professor at Boston University. He wrote a book called Religious Literacy. He said, your criticism shows, and I'm quoting here, that You can be a very smart person and be very dumb when it comes to religion. Professor Pinker just doesn't get it. And Prothero has gone on to say that that you have to understand religion to come to grips with various hot-button cultural issues like abortion, stem cell research, gay rights. And he says Iraq is such a mess right now because our leaders in Washington just didn't understand a basic fact about Islam before they launched the war, that Sunnis and Shiites hate each other. He said all of this comes from religious ignorance. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, buy into the religion, but it means you have to understand religion.
I think you have to understand history. Religion is one of the things you have to understand. But the situation in Iraq is not primarily a theological one. There are just as fierce battles among the various tribes and militias and clans and nationalities. So it's not just a Shiite-Sunni dispute even there. The mistake was not being ignorant of religion. The mistake was being ignorant of all aspects of Iraqi society, including family structure, local history, the evolutionary psychology of kinship and how it reinforces ties of family and clan and kin in Iraq in a way that differs from countries that we're more familiar with. So religion should be part of it. I don't see why, of all of the forces that go into history, military, economic, sociological, evolutionary, psychological, and so on, religion itself should be privileged.
You know, it's interesting. When you say understanding religion, it depends what you mean by understanding religion. Obviously, religion is a tremendously powerful influence in history and in the inner worlds of people. And I have to say, one of the arguments, and I think this is something that Steve and I disagree with or talk about, somewhat different attitude towards, I do worry whether some of the people who are writing the new atheist books understand what it feels like to be a religious person. Do they get what that feels like to respond to the world religiously? And I don't want to say that that's homogeneous, that there's only one kind of religious impulse. There are so many different ways of responding to the world that could be called religious, some of them very expansive and life-embracing and world-embracing, and some of them not. I think one of the things that made you, Steve, nervous was to pose these two things, you know, faith, reason, religion, science, as alternative ways of pursuing the truth, the pursuit of knowledge. Faith is not an alternative mode to science and to reason. And that there was something about the requirement
exactly,
that seemed to...
Here's another way of putting it. I think I would be opposed to a requirement on astrology and astronomy or alchemy and chemistry. Not because I don't think people should know about astrology. Astrology had an important role in the ancient world, and there are many things you can't understand unless you know something about astrology, the plays of Shakespeare, and so on. Likewise, a historian of science really should know something about alchemy. It's not something that you should be ignorant about. What I'm opposed to is equating it with reason or science.
But can you really equate religion with astrology or religion with alchemy? I mean, no serious scholar takes astrology or alchemy seriously. Lots of serious scholars, serious thinkers are very serious about religion.
Well, I would put faith in that same category because faith is believing something without a good reason to believe it. And if it's juxtaposed with reason, if it's that which isn't the same thing as reason, then I think I would put it in the same category as alchemy and astrology. That is, things that people believe that they don't have a good reason to believe.
Boy, those are fighting words.
He said it, not me.
Well, Rebecca, I mean, where do you come down on this? I mean, you grew up in a very religious milieu. I mean, obviously you have moved away from that position, but do you reject it out of hand, as it sounds like Steve does?
You know, I do intellectually, I do believe very much in trying to justify one's beliefs, and I try as hard as I can to justify all my beliefs. I really think that is a human responsibility. We get into terrible trouble if we believe sloppily, if we let emotions and our own view of the way we want the world to be shape the way we think the world is. I think this accounts for a great deal of the madness in the world. I'm completely committed to trying to justify everything, and in that regard, I have very little use for faith. However, I know what it feels like to believe without justification. And we all do it to some. I mean, I believe my children, for example, are the most wonderful children ever born. As of course most parents feel that way about themselves, and it's a useful thing, perhaps to a certain extent, to feel that way. Could I justify it? Should I even go about justifying it? Should I justify my love for them? There would be something wrong with that. As I said, it can manifest, this religious response to the world can manifest itself in such loving ways and also in such hating ways.
Well, Steve, you're a scientist. Rebecca, you're a philosopher as well as a novelist. Which do you think is the most fruitful path for understanding these kinds of things we're talking about? Understanding reality, I guess you could say. Is it science, philosophy, or art?
All.
I would agree. And I think neither Rebecca nor I draws a sharp line between philosophy and science. Philosophy is the exploration of ideas and their relationships, of questions of truth and logic and knowledge, which I think bleeds into science.
And I would also include, of course, and I'm glad that you did include art, that is also, I think, a way of understanding the world, that there is a real cognitive role that art plays. And it's interesting in psychology that it seems to me that some of the deepest truths about human nature were discovered by novelists long before the psychologists. The notion of the unconscious, for example, is in so much great literature long before it became, you know, a central notion in psychology. And human motivations are explored in literature. And it is a way of also expanding our knowledge beyond our own puny experience. So all of these ways, philosophy and science and art, are ways of trying to expand our reach beyond our own very limited experience.
Rebecca Goldstein and Steven Pinker talking with Steve Paulson. Goldstein is a philosopher and fiction writer. Her latest novel is called 36 Arguments for the Existence of God. Pinker is a cognitive psychologist at Harvard.